today I'll be try to answer at least some of the things you always wanted to know about graph processing. This is work done at EPFL together with Baptiste Lepere and Professor Willis Vanapol. So why did we even think that people want to know about graph processing? Well, turns out that graphs are really everywhere. And this presence of graph structured data has in fact led to an abundance of systems being designed to mine this data and execute algorithms over it. You see that we have single machine and distributed systems, systems that store and compute from main memory and from the compute out of core. Now, the topic of this talk will be single machine in memory systems. More specifically, we want to see what techniques work and why do they work when it comes to single machine graph processing. So we might wonder now, there's all these systems, haven't they already answered this? Well, our work is a bit different because we want to do an end-to-end evaluation and we want to compare techniques rather than different systems. What I mean by end-to-end evaluation is that executing the algorithm is in fact only one piece of the puzzle. To get to execute the algorithm, we need to do a certain pre-processing to build the data structures that we need for the algorithm. This means that the end-to-end time is in fact equal to the pre-processing time and the algorithm time altogether. Why is this important? Well, to just quickly motivate you, here is an execution of breadth first search over the Twitter graph in an existing system called Ligra. On the y-axis, we have the execution time, and on the x-axis, we have two versions of the algorithm. One is the baseline code, and the other one is slightly optimized codes in the same system. We see that these optimizations clearly lead to a significant improvement in the algorithm execution time. But to be able to do these optimizations, the system had to do additional pre-processing compared to the baseline. When we add this into the picture, it actually looks quite different. So the bottom line is that we really need to understand the trade-off this added pre-processing adds in the end-to-end time. So furthermore, we want to compare techniques and not systems. So we implemented techniques that are used in different systems within one system. We wanted to evaluate them in isolation because otherwise we might be constrained by the API a certain system provides. And also, it's worth noting that when we implemented the techniques, they had a comparable or a better running time than in the original system. So we did our best to make them really efficient. More precisely, in this talk, I will try to answer questions related to pre-processing and algorithm execution time on how can we represent the graph and at what cost, and how can we improve the algorithm time. The answer to this question depends on the algorithm being executed and the shape of the graph it's executing on. During the talk, I will show results on two types of the algorithm. Algorithm with only a subset of vertices active during an iteration, such as breadth first search, and algorithms that have the entire graph active at every iteration, such as PageRank and SPMV. I will present the results over a parallel graph that represents the structure of social networks, more specifically a synthetic graph with 1 billion edges and 64 million vertices. We assume the graph is stored as an edge array. So how can we represent the graph? Well, here on the left, we have a little tiny graph. And when it's represented as an edge array, it is simply an array of elements where each element has the source and the destination. The good thing is that this layout is the same as the input, so we don't have any pre-processing. But if we want to locate the edges that belong to a certain vertex, we need to scan the entire array to be sure we found them all. So people solved this problem by laying the graph out as an adjacency list. And here is the same graph represented as adjacency lists that are pointed by the source vertices. Here, every vertex points to an array that contains the IDs of vertices this vertex is connected to. However, we need to add some pre-processing to group the edges by vertex, but now it's very easy to locate the edges of a particular vertex. So we can have adjacency lists and edge arrays to represent the graph, but how can we efficiently create these adjacency lists? An intuitive approach is to use dynamic allocation, where when we see an edge, for example, 0 to 2, we dynamically allocate space pointed to by vertex 0 and fill the space with the ID of vertex 2 that this vertex 0 is connected to. We take the next edge, dynamically allocate space, and add the ID of vertex 3. We keep on doing that until we build the entire adjacency list. However, note that we now have many frequent reallocations and allocations of memory. Furthermore, the adjacency list ends up being spread out all over memory. So systems did better, and they can load the edge array into memory. Then they sorted by source or destination, using counting sort or radix sort, and end up with an array containing the destination vertices belonging to adjacency lists of vertices, who in turn have pointers to the beginning of their adjacency list. In this way, we avoid reallocations during pre-processing, and we end up with an adjacency list that is contiguous in memory. Now the question is, which one of these three approaches, dynamic counting sort or radix sort, is really better? Well, we ran them all, and we were really surprised to find that the radix sort was more than 3 times better than the other two approaches. So we looked at the reasons behind this, and it turns out that it actually has a significantly lower last level cache miss rate. It went from about 70 to 26%. So due to this lower cache miss rate, radix sort was 3.5 times better than the other two approaches. So if we need to build adjacency lists, we should use a radix sort. Now, what data layout is best when it comes to executing algorithms? On this slide, I show the execution of breadth first search in PageRank, where on the y-axis we have the time again, and on the x-axis we have the data layout being used for a particular run. What we can see is that the adjacency list outperforms the edge array in algorithm execution time. When we add the needed pre-processing to build this adjacency list, we see that it's actually a clear win for BFS, and this comes because the algorithm is such that at every iteration, it wants to process only the edges of the vertices it cares about. Whereas for an edge array, we would need to stream the entire edge array at every iteration. However, PageRank is an algorithm that anyways at every iteration reads all the edges, so the difference is much smaller. But still, the adjacency list wins by a bit. Does this mean that they always win? Well, no. Let's look at SPMV. It's a simple sparse matrix vector multiplication that does one pass over the graph. One pass over the graph, the same as the pre-processing. Therefore, the pre-processing cannot really ever be amortized. So which data layout is the best? Really depends on the algorithm. If we have an algorithm that passes only once over the graph, we can just as well use an edge array and don't build any other more complex data structures. Now that we've seen how can we pre-process the graph, can we further improve algorithm time? Further, and more specifically, can we improve the cache locality since we saw it played a big role in the pre-processing? To see how we could improve cache locality, we first need to understand the memory accesses that happen during graph processing depending on the data layout. So first, we always fetch an edge. Fetching an edge in an edge array just means reading an item from the array. Since we stream through the array, we can say that we have cache-friendly edge reads. Then we need to read the state of the source vertex. However, the edge array is not sorted by source, and this means that we can have potential random accesses to source state. And the same goes when we need to read the destinations, because this array is not sorted by destination either. So we can have random access to destination state. Let's look if this looks any better when we have an adjacency list. Fetching an edge in adjacency list simply means reading the source, going to its adjacency list, reading the first item of the list, and then we just stream through the adjacency list. So we have cache-friendly edge reads. Note here that when we want to read the state of the source, we do it only once for the entire adjacency list. So the source state read is also cache-friendly. However, reading the destination is still potentially leading to random accesses because the adjacency list is not sorted by destination. And even if it was, we can't guarantee that it's a contiguous set of destination vertices we would have. And indeed, when we measure the cache miss rates of these two data layouts for these two algorithms, we saw that they're significant, that they're very high. So the natural question is, can the cache miss rate be improved, and at what cost? So we saw that the main source of cache misses is, in fact, fetching the state of the source and destination vertices. So if there was some way we could bound the number of states we're reading at a certain point in time and achieve some level of temporal locality, maybe we could have a better cache miss rate. So we borrowed a technique that's used in out-of-core systems, in particular a system called grid graph, that lays out the graph in a grid as follows. Here again, we have a graph represented as an edge array and a grid on the right. We divide the vertices into ranges, and then we place the edges as follows. We take an edge, for example, 0 to 2. we place it in the row to which its source vertex belongs, and into the column into which its destination vertex belongs. That means that this edge will be placed in the first row and in the second column. And then computation happens, and then we do the same for the rest of the edges, and computation happens over cells of row or column. So here at the point in time, we're reading the state of either 0 to 1 or 2 to 3, and indeed, we were able to achieve much better cache locality with this data layout. So does this improved cache miss rate map directly to the algorithm execution time? Here we have an execution of breadth-first search and the three data layouts on the x-axis, their execution time on the y-axis. We see that the adjacency list still outperforms the other two data layouts, and this does not change when we add the pre-processing time. The reason is, again, that with an adjacency list, we can still read only the data that we care about. You saw that with a grid, a cell can contain edges that belong to more than one vertex. So we still can't isolate only the relevant part of the data that we want to. So an adjacency list has the best performance when it comes to executing breadth-first search. Now for PageRank, this picture looks a bit different. The grid outperforms both data layouts in terms of algorithm execution time, and even though it has a higher pre-processing time than the adjacency list, it is still better even in end-to-end time. Now, the reason is, again, PageRank reads the entire edges of the graph at every iteration, so this lowered cache miss rate actually becomes visible in the execution time. So yes, we can optimize for cache locality, so we changed the answer to our previous question to a grid for PageRank, but still whether this optimization pays off depends on the algorithm. Now, can we also perhaps optimize for hardware, more specifically for NUMA, since we're running in a single machine and today's servers have a lot of memory that's typically laid out as NUMA? What does it mean to be NUMA aware? It means that once we have the data structures built, we need to partition them across existing NUMA nodes in the system, and then we want to have threads computing as much as possible on their local data. And to evaluate the impact the hardware configuration has on these optimizations, we looked at two machines, one that has two NUMA nodes and another one that has four. So how do we place data in a NUMA-aware manner? This is a very simplified explanation where we have, again, our graph laid out as an adjacency list, and on the right, two NUMA nodes. What we do is we split the vertices across the nodes, and then we take the edges and place them in such a way that each edge is collocated with its destination vertex. So edges 0 to 1 and 1 to 0 will go into the first NUMA node, and edges that are pointing to nodes, to vertices 2 and 3, will go into the second NUMA node. So here, we plot the running time of PageRank. On the x-axis, you see our two machines, and you have the way the data is laid out for each run. First, we interleave the data across all the available NUMA nodes, and then we also look at the running time when data is placed in a NUMA-aware manner. We see that we have a 27 to 50% improvement in computation time. However, to be NUMA-aware, we need to add an additional partitioning step to the pre-processing. So we look at this end-to-end time now, and we see that this pre-processing ends up being fully amortized only on the bigger machine. We also ran breadth-first search, and again, the x-axis shows the two machines with data interleaved in NUMA-aware placement, but the result is a bit counterintuitive. We have a longer algorithm execution time when the data was NUMA-aware. This actually came from the features of the algorithm and the way the data, the graph was generated, because it turns out that at every step of the computation, the data that was accessed was on the same NUMA node. So this led to load imbalance and contention on the memory bus because threads were constantly trying to access data on the same node. So to conclude, yes, being NUMA-aware can pay off, but only on big machines, and only for algorithms that are that have the same characteristics such as PageRank. Now, in addition to hardware related optimizations, there is a third set of optimizations related to algorithm execution time that's refers to the way data is propagated through the graph. More specifically, whether we push or pull data during computation. Pushing data means that vertices push information to their neighbors. That means that they need to be aware of their outgoing edges. Pulling data means that they are pulling information from their incoming neighbors and hence need the incoming set of edges. So which one is better? Well, when you push information, you need to update the state of your neighbors. And since many vertices can have the same neighbor, they actually need to write to the state of others and lock this data. But it's good when only a few vertices are active during computation, because then only the active subset of vertices needs to propagate data. To pull information, however, you write to your own state, so you can be the only writer to your state. And this is good when you have many vertices active, so there is no competing to update the same state. And you can potentially avoid locking if you redesign your algorithm a bit. So which one is better when we look at the actual execution times? Again, we look at breadth-first search and PageRank. We have adjacency list. We use the optimal data layout for each of the algorithms. And essentially, we see that for adjacency list, even though we can remove locks in the pull model, the push model was still a bit better. The reason is that in the push model, we only have, again, the active subset of vertices propagating data. In the pull model, every vertex needed to check whether it was already in the breadth-first tree. For PageRank, however, we just by switching the information flow, we achieved an improvement of 1.5x in the algorithm and end-to-end time. So less synchronization is not always a win. You need to understand your algorithm. And for breadth-first search, even though it uses locking, pushing is preferred. But for PageRank, you can use the same data structure, just switch to information flow, and have improvements in running time. Now, for breadth-first search, people have seen that push and pull win in different iterations, depending on the number of active vertices in a particular iteration. So the idea is, can we combine them and switch between the two of them? However, the cost for this is that now you need both the incoming and the outgoing edges if you're planning to use both push and pull within one execution. So we looked at breadth-first search when using the winning push approach and this switching between push and pull. Indeed, the running time was significantly lower when it comes to algorithm execution time. But for the push model, we only need the outgoing edges. For the push and pull, we need both. So in end-to-end time, there was really no gain. The only way there would be a gain is that the input graph was undirected. So the set of incoming and outgoing edges is the same, and the pre-processing times would be the same. So the push and pull switch has no win in end-to-end time on directed graphs. Now, there is more details in the paper with regards to the scalability of the three pre-processing approaches that I just mentioned. We also looked at how the pre-processing depends on where the graph is loaded from, the type of storage the graph is loaded from. And we have results on other algorithms and different graph types. Now, all these techniques were borrowed from certain systems. This is a list of systems that inspired us and whose techniques we borrowed and implemented. As you can see, none of them has all of these techniques. And it would be unfair to take techniques from one system and implement them in another that was completely not optimized for them. So all these systems, and the slide in the beginning that I talked about, talk about systems. In this talk, I did not talk about systems. I talked about techniques in both the pre-processing and in the algorithm execution, used both the pre-processing and the algorithm execution time. And if there's one thing you should remember is that improvement in computation is not free. There is a significant trade-off between the pre-processing you add and the gain you have in your algorithm time. It most depends on the algorithm you're executing. So for short algorithms, we saw that no optimization helped. But if you're running breadth-first search, building an adjacency list was always amortized. And if your algorithm has the characteristics as PageRank, well, we can go even further and build more complex data structures, such as the grid, and leverage the hardware characteristics and be NUMA aware. We will make our code public by the end of the next week. It's going to be online, actually, on this link. So please fork us. And if you have any ideas of additional experiments that you would like to see in the code, we'd be happy to hear them. So with that, I'll conclude and thank you for your attention, and we'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
I was kidding before, by the way.
Irfan Ahmed, Cache Physics, thank you for practicing experimental computer science. It's really nice to see. Great presentation, great work.
Thank you.
But it's also a little depressing, right? I mean, there's like, what are we supposed to do? You've shattered all our hopes, and there's no one answer. So where do we go from here? What's your advice on how to...
Yes, I mean, that was also... There is hope. I guess it just strives from... You need to really understand the algorithms you want to run, and then maybe compromise for some algorithms. If you are going to run, for example, breadth first search and PageRank together, then you can build an adjacency list. But we have more details, for example, in the paper, how you can optimize these adjacency lists to improve the PageRank running time or allow for some flexibility in the API. For example, existing systems could allow for some flexibility in their API to improve their running time on algorithms such as PageRank, for example. So it just strives on allowing a bit, I think, more flexibility in the API depending on the characteristics of the algorithm.
Okay, so that's one lesson, which is the interfaces for systems, practical systems built with these insights could be more flexible and more broad.
Yeah.
Is there any comments you have about the ability of a monitoring system to kind of dynamically figure out where, without the developer having to annotate and really pick this stuff, right, to automatically be able to maybe tune some of these once those APIs are broader and more flexible?
I think yes, because the characteristics that we describe are not too complex. Basically, what is the percentage of active data you have in an iteration? It can be high or low. How many passes do you do over the graph, one or many? Okay. So it's not too many if-else statements that would take you to a correct conclusion, I guess. So maybe some input from the developer, from the actual application, would be insightful, but it wouldn't be too complex. So I think it would be doable in a system
to do
that.
Thanks.
Thank you for the question.
Hi, nice work. I think there's a lot of valuable insight on it. Just one question. All the results you show here are based on a graph that it's power law, which means that you will have some edges. I will have multiple connections. Some edges I have just a few.
Yeah.
But for the paper, you also study some other kind of graph, and I guess more regular graphs in which most of the edges, most of the nodes have similar number of edges. What's the difference in terms of your analysis between those types?
So we looked at another type of graphs in the paper. It's on higher diameter graphs that also have this feature that you have low per vertex connectivity, which is fairly balanced among the vertices. And some of the conclusions are a bit different. For example, for PageRank, building a grid might not be always amortized. You can just stream through an edge array, for example. So we have more details on this type of graphs in the paper and how some of the conclusions might change when your graph is this type of graph.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.